thing with athletics is that you train as if next year is going to be your year, and every year is going to be your year, but there is no guarantee. So it's the ultimate delayed gratification, because you're working your butt off and you don't even know if you're going to get there. We're in 2024, and in 2021, I was a delivery driver. And it's been a crazy journey. I'm a big advocate. If you want to enter the public speaking game, you should initially do stuff for free. The last thing you want to do in speaking is, success is good work plus visibility. And sometimes we think that good work alone will make us successful, but that isn't the case. The return on investment when you invest in yourself, infinite.
How is it that you went about understanding the value that you can charge to these organizations?
The highest I've been paid is $7,500 for a talk.
Yeah. How long was the talk?
45 minutes.
I'm gone. No, we're cutting the pod. I'm going to become a public speaker. Today's episode might be my favorite ever. You will leave the episode inspired, charged, and just energized. Today's guest, Fred Afrifa, is a global public speaker, and today he discusses his journey from primary school to Las Vegas stage. It is one you do not want to miss. Now over to the show. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk to best friends in the hope of inspiring you to take immediate action to find the career of your dreams. Today, I'm talking to my best friend, the public speaker, Frederick Afrifa. Fred, bro, can I call you Fred?
You can call me Fred, bro.
Fred, my G. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bro, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation, man. We do love to start with an icebreaker. What did you want to be when you were younger, bro?
When, it depends, what age?
Bro, let's go with 10.
Okay, when I was 10, I wanted to be a footballer.
Oh, wow.
When I was 10, I can't lie, I wanted to be a footballer.
And then what, so did your dream change over time? Let's go 15.
15, I wanted to be an Olympic champion.
Okay. And then let's go 25.
25, I wanted to be the man I am today.
Okay, we like that. So your dream has it's developed over the years, but yeah, let's take it way back. Like, how is it you've become a public speaker? What are the jobs that you've held and the experiences that you've had that have led up to this moment, I suppose?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because even throughout all of the little dreams that I had, it was all underpinned under the fact that I wanted to inspire people and give them hope. That started because I'm from Ghana originally. And I remember going to Ghana when I was a child. And I went to Ghana with my family and I saw how my cousins were living. And this was my direct family, my mom's sister's children. And they were living in what I would have called extreme poverty. And they were cool. They were happy. And I remember just driving around Ghana, there'd be kids on the street dancing. And I remember at that point understanding how privileged I was to be this African kid born in Europe. And I wanted, I don't know why, at that point I just wanted to inspire them for whatever reason. And the first way I thought I would do that is through sports. Because as a kid, that's kind of what you see, sport and entertainment. And so that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah.
And my first job was as a sales rep. And I didn't really like it. But I've always, throughout all of my part-time roles, I always saw it as a means to an end. And at the time, I was pursuing athletics.
Okay.
So being an athlete was like my first real proper job. And again, I was doing athletics as a means to inspire people. And my dream, which didn't necessarily materialize, was to compete at the Olympics for Ghana one day. Again, to inspire people in Ghana. But now I do this.
Okay. And right, we're gonna go into all of that. So, you said that you lived in Europe. You didn't say the UK. So yeah, where is it? You were brought up.
I grew up in Italy, in Milan.
Okay, you grew up in Milano.
Milano.
Okay, and obviously you're in the UK now. At what age is it that you came to the UK?
13.
13 years old.
So 13 years old, and it was such a big shock. I grew up in Milan, where I was the only African kid in my school.
How was that? Because is it as bad as I think? Because based on what I see in football,
it is as bad as you think. Damn. There are two sides to everything, two sides to society, and it's all I knew. So it's important to understand that I didn't necessarily know that racism was a bad thing, because I'm born into it. I'm just born into, as far as I can remember, being on the bus and people moving funny or old women clutching their bag when I'm close to them. It's not until I moved to the UK that I realized, oh, those are experiences that should have never happened. So for all I knew, that was just everyday life.
So you moved from Milan. Where in the UK did you move to?
Brixton.
Why did I do that? Like I'm from South. I'm from Essex. And I did it like from South, but I'm not. Okay, so you moved to Brixton. And like, you know, I'm not giving away your age, but you know, Brixton's obviously a bit gentrified now, but I'm assuming when you were younger, Brixton was the ends.
Pre-gentrified.
So how was that? How was that moving from Milan to Brixton?
Different. Because my world spun upside down. I was of the opinion as a kid that black people in Africa and white people in Europe.
Yeah.
Because when I went back to Ghana, I would see black people. And then I went back to Italy and I would just see white people. Yeah. And then I was in Brixton and I was just confused. So I remember also thinking, because I lived in Brixton, that the UK was mainly black.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until my history teacher told me, I don't know how this came about because my history teacher was white, but he must have asked the class, what do you guys think is the percentage of black people? And I said like 90%. Oh, my school was mainly black. My neighbors are black.
Karen's turning over in her grave.
And my history teacher said, nah, mate.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? 3%? Mm-hmm. And I really didn't believe it. And it's not until I branched outside of London that I realized, yes, that was the case. But to answer your question, I was in Brixton and it was a total culture shock. However, it didn't really do much for my confidence because within the first couple months, I got robbed.
Oh, my God.
Yes. On my way home from school, it was dark. I got robbed. So initially, I had that boost of confidence. Oh, there are a lot of people that look like me. But then those same people robbed me.
Wow.
So then it was...
Could you talk the language at the time?
No.
Wow.
So I'm in school. I'm
so you
learning.
Didn't even know what was happening?
Just didn't know what was happening.
Phone. Pocket. No, let me not even make a joke because it's mad.
I'll quickly tell you the story. I was really naive. So I remember walking home. I was in Tolls Hill, which is near Brixton. And I was walking home. It was dark. And I was walking through a park. And you know every bag, at the top of their bag, you have that little hoop. Mm. I don't know what that even is for. But this person's basically hang on to the hoop. And I've kind of gone back. Mm. And I'm like, okay, like what's going on here? And then I heard phone. So I took out my phone and then he took it.
Wow.
Yeah, so I didn't really understand what was happening. He said something to do with a phone and I took out my phone. I thought, I don't know if he needed help or whatever. Then I remember him taking the phone and I remember just going home upset thinking, damn, this has just happened. I wanted to go back to Italy.
Yeah.
And yeah, that messed me up for a long while.
And you know, yeah, like my question off the back of that, like how is it you went about like rebuilding your confidence, because that's such a traumatic experience, right? And I'm sorry, actually, yeah, on reflection, that I made a joke, because wild. But yeah, like, how is it you went about rebuilding your confidence?
It took a long time. And I think it's not a coincidence that I do the work that I do now, because at the time, the way I thought I had to rebuild my confidence was be something that I wasn't. So I took on a persona and I put on a mask. And I pretended to be something that I wasn't for quite a long time. Mm. And I was all in trying to discover who I truly was. So for a while, I would pretend to be a gangster, but I wasn't really that. And then I would hang around with the nerdy kids, but I knew I wasn't that. And it took me years, if I'm going to be honest. I would put on a front, that was okay. But my confidence was shattered for a long time.
Oh, dear. Well, I know that you're a very confident person now, and we can talk about that. But yeah, you know, you mentioned the fact that... you know, you had the dream to be the Olympian. And I know, speaking to you off camera, that, yeah, like, you got very close to achieving that dream. So, yeah, can you tell us about how it is you got into athletics?
Yes, so I was always good at sports and I always enjoyed sports. Sports day, you do your thing.
Yeah.
And I remember winning sports day. My teacher, who represented Togo, I think in the Commonwealth Games, pretty much forced me into athletics. He said, give it a go. At the time, I just wanted to play football. Playing football, playing volleyball. And
oh, I played volleyball.
Did you play volleyball as well?
Six aside.
Yeah, I loved volleyball.
I was a setter. One London Youth Games. Yeah, I was part of the team. Yeah, that's cool.
That's so sick. So I said, I'll do 1 year of football, 1 year of athletics, and then just see what's up. And I'm in secondary school. So I did 1 year of football, played for Croydon Juniors. Nothing much happened. 1 year of athletics. In my first year, I went to a competition called English Schools on Sky Sports. So, Leapy, I've just started doing athletics. I've run on Sky Sports. All my school friends have seen me. I said, okay, this is the evidence that I need.
Yeah.
That suggests I need to do athletics. So I did athletics, I pursued it, and it was a long grind. It took me 7 years to sign my first contract, my first deal, mad, which was really difficult. So I was balancing athletics with education. I took a gap year, still didn't sign. And eventually, while I was at uni, I signed for a team in Italy, mm-hmm, Lucca. And that was awesome. Shortly after I signed, I won my first national title. That was in 2019.
For what discipline?
400 meters.
Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah, so the year I signed in 2018, I came third under 23 in the 400 meters indoors. The year after, I won it. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, this is a great step for 2020. And I knew getting into the Olympics in the individual 400 meters would be very difficult. But I thought I'd have a chance in the relay. And I did a few relay camps with the national team. I thought, okay, this is going to be a tangible thing. And then COVID happened. Ugh. So after COVID, things got really difficult. Also, because I had scholarship offers to go to the States. This even boosted my dream. Because I thought, okay, I'm going to go to the States. I'm going to train over there. And I'm going to go to the games. Yeah. But I didn't get to go to the States because of COVID. My team stopped paying me. And as a result, I was still training, but I was working as a delivery driver. I had to make a bit of peas. And then it got really difficult because just imagine, bro. Say I have training at 4 p.m. I'm waking up at 5, going to do my delivery job from 6 to 2, coming home, eating, then going to training. Repeating that. And it really did affect my performances. It started to decline. Yeah. Even in training, I just couldn't train the same. Before, I'd wake up fresh, go to training. Now I'm having to do a delivery driver jobs and then go to training. And I'm competing against people who are just doing this full time. So it's not really a level playing field. Yeah. And eventually I decided to stop athletics, as I was fortunate enough that the speaking and the business was booming at the time. But yeah, recently, not too long ago, I made the difficult decision at the time to stop.
Wow. And, you know, I haven't had an athlete on the podcast before. You know, you mentioned the fact that you did 7 years before you signed that first contract. As like an aspiring athlete, for those 7 years, can you just like put me in your shoes? Like, what is it like? Like, how many days a week are you training? Are you watching out on your nutrition? Because like the Ronaldos and that, obviously we know, and the LeBron James, now we know to watch out on our nutrition, but it's not always been the case. So yeah, can you give us like your reality of those 7 years?
Absolutely. So similarly to this podcast, the production is already of an elite podcast. Envisioning you're going to get there. That's how you're, and that's exactly how we are as athletes. Yeah. So I'm behaving as an Olympian, even though I'm not an Olympian just yet. Yeah. So I was at university watching my diet, training full time, 5-6 days a week for about 3 to 4 hours a day.
Wow.
Continuously, I had to sacrifice family holidays. I had to just put myself first and really just have an athlete's mindset. And every year, the thing with athletics is that you train as if next year is going to be your year, and every year is going to be your year, but there is no guarantee.
Mm.
So it's the ultimate delayed gratification, because you're working your butt off and you don't even know if you're going to get there. It's a big unknown.
But that, like, working on the delayed gratification, I suppose that serves you well, right?
Absolutely.
You also mentioned the fact that you were doing this whilst you're at university. So yeah, like, what is it you went to study at university, and how did this align with any of the dreams that we've discussed?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So I didn't necessarily have intentions to go to university. I'm from Ghana. I'm the firstborn. I'm the only boy. I was going to uni.
Yeah. We've heard that before.
And I can definitely say I mainly went to uni for my parents. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And also, I didn't necessarily see that as a bad thing, because my parents have made some crazy sacrifices for me to be in this position. So I thought, if it's going to bring them happiness for me to go to university, I would sacrifice 4 years of my life to go to uni. I didn't necessarily see it as a chore.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't necessarily recommend that to a young person, to me, I thought it's worth the sacrifice that my parents have done.
Mm.
So initially, I went to Middlesex University only because at the time, I got the opportunity to train with one of the most elite training groups in Europe. And the coach had told me that he had some sort of partnership with Middlesex. And he said, if you want to train with me and you want to go to uni, I suggest you go to Middlesex. I had no intentions of going to Middlesex. I studied sports science. I hated science. But I just wanted to train with this dude.
Yeah.
So that shows you how much athletics was at the forefront. I was making lots of sacrifices. I hated sports science because I didn't like science. And sports science is basically biology.
Yeah.
It's basically, like, it's basically just science, but they call it sports science. You know what I'm saying? So I stopped that. Then I went to Hertfordshire University, again, because I was training in North London at the time, at Lee Valley. So I knew that I needed to go to university that would allow me to train in North London. And I studied accounting and French. Knowing I did not want to be an accountant, I only went to that university because it allowed me to train where I wanted to train. And yeah, ultimately, that's why I made that decision.
Okay. So typically, I ask people, is university worth it? But, you know, from this discussion, I know it's not something that you particularly wanted to do. And I suppose whilst you were there, it didn't change your mind, did it?
It didn't. And I think, is university worth it is an interesting question. It's worth it if it aligns with your pathway.
Mm.
So if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, it's something that you have to do. And the maddest thing is that for me, university was a crazy turning point because at that university, I trained in this group. And this is crazy. And I remember there was one day that I was training in this group and this triple jumper, it's a group of sprinters, and this triple jumper just so happened to join our session. That triple jumper just so happened to be speaking in schools.
Okay.
And had I not gone to uni, I wouldn't have been training with them. I wouldn't have met this triple jumper. I had a conversation with him. Randomly, I told him, I'm trying to speak in schools, you know. And he told me he spoke in schools. He also told me he was going to America for a competition. So there were some schools that he couldn't go to. And I ended up speaking in those schools on his behalf.
Wow.
And that was my entry point into public speaking.
I love it.
So was university worth it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey. Because in a crazy way, without going to university, that wouldn't have happened. And my life would be different.
Fred, I mean, this has been fire already.
Yeah.
And like, I know from like seeing your content, like I know that, like you said, you know, this chance encounter happened and that's led to your public speaking, but there's almost like a whole another side to it. And, you know, you touched upon the fact that you were a delivery driver. There was something that I saw on your page that stuck with me so it just hit me. Mm. And it was like, your life can completely change in 3 years. And like you showed like the picture of before and you showed the picture today. And yeah, like you touched upon the fact that you'd done some delivery driving, you made the difficult decision to quit athletics, but the public speaking is booming. Can you, yeah, now take us through that period of, yeah, delivery driver through to getting your first opportunity, yeah, and to where we are?
Absolutely, and I strongly believe that we're in 2024, and in 2021, I was a delivery driver. I still quit about March 2021. So, and this month I spoke in Las Vegas at one of the biggest conferences in the world. So it just goes to show it can happen. And it's been a crazy journey. The reason it's crazy and also a little bit complicated, there are two sides of the speaking stuff that I do.
Yeah.
I'm a keynote speaker, so I'll go to schools, conferences, and I speak. And I'm also a public speaking coach, presentation skills coach, where I'll go into organizations and help their talent with presentation skills. Even though they sound like the same thing, they are different. So I started off as just a speaker. And I got the opportunity through Daniel Lewis. Shout out to Daniel Lewis. I spoke at the school where he didn't speak. And that was for free. I didn't get charged
wow,
any money.
Okay.
Then at that point, the main reason I wanted to speak is because it was initially my biggest weakness. And I just wanted to develop my speaking, my presentation skills. I didn't think I was going to become a speaker one day. I fortunately had an entry point that was my athletics career. So what I would do is I would reach out to schools and tell them, hey, I'm an athlete. I would like to speak to your students about overcoming adversity since it took me 7 years to sign pro. Important to note that I would reach out to 100 schools a day.
Wow.
For time.
And just on that, like, reaching out to schools and wanting to deliver this message,
yes.
Like, why is it that you felt that this message needed to be delivered?
There were two reasons. Number one, selfishly, I thought the only way I'm going to improve at this is by doing it. So I want to do it. And number two, I was that African kid in Italy. And I really wished that there was someone that would have made me feel like it was okay that I was different, and that was perfectly fine. I remember finding real pleasure in seeing players like Michael Essien balling for Chelsea. And that would just be like, oh, there's someone from Ghana that I can relate to that's doing well. And that would just bring me so much pride and joy. And I just remember feeling that pride and joy and happiness as a kid and thinking, one day I would love to give this happiness, pride and joy to someone else. I didn't know how, just winging it, just figuring it out. So that's the real deep-rooted reason. And I think that's what gave me the drive. Also, I had this mindset of an athlete and I had that delayed gratification, training with no clear expectation or with no guarantee that I'll do well. So I'm doing all of this, I'm sending all these emails, I'm calling the schools with no guarantee that it will work, but I've been doing this for years as an athlete.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work, it is what it is. And I went ham. I reached out to lots of different schools and I did it all for free initially. And what I did without realizing is I started to build social proof and I started to build evidence that I'm someone who can do this. So eventually I started to get charged. I started to charge for it. I started to get money from it. And I started to work with agencies who would get schools on my behalf. And that was the entry point into speaking. I would only speak in primary schools. And literally up until 2022, I had only ever spoken in primary schools. So I was speaking in primary schools about overcoming adversity, using my journey, how I had to overcome adversity as an athlete. And my motto was keep moving forwards.
Love it.
So I'll get the kids to do a call and response, keep moving forwards.
As in you say keep, and
I'd say keep moving forwards, repeat after me, keep moving forwards. Oh, and again, keep. And I loved it. And that was my entry point into speaking.
Can we just, sorry, because I know that as you talk more, it's just going to take me in so many directions. Yes. So let's just focus on that first. So like the primary schools that you're going into, you mentioned the fact that you did them for free.
Yep.
And then eventually start getting paid.
Yep.
To like aspiring public speakers who, you know, oh, I want to go and do some stuff for free. Like if you had to think back, how many 3 hours do you think you gave before you started to get paid? Like, is it 5? Is it, I went in a couple of times. Is it 10, 20? Like how many free labor hours do you think you actually contributed?
Very good question.
Roughly, we don't need to know exactly.
Yeah, roughly. I did about 5 gigs for free.
Okay.
And I think what you want, I'm a big advocate. If you want to enter the public speaking game, you should initially do stuff for free. Number one, you don't know what you're doing. You think your message is funny when you wrote it down and then you deliver it in front of an audience and then no one's going to laugh. This happens to me so many times. I thought of something, I'm like, this is hilarious. And I deliver it.
He's just there like picking their nose.
Crickets.
Like,
yeah. I need to figure this one out. So the last thing you want to do in speaking is be paid and not do a good job.
Yeah.
That's a lot, because your reputation, once you ruin it, you can't really get it back.
Yeah.
So you want to take time. So those free gigs, they are giving you an opportunity to learn. Mm-hmm. And you have a platform to learn. On top of that, you then have evidence, testimonials, and you speaking. Because no one's really going to pay you for something that they have no proof that you can do. So I'd always say, if to enter the speaking game, the first thing you need to establishes what you want to speak about, your message, who you want to speak to, your audience, and then try and get some free engagements.
And just on this, because I made this error, because I actually went into a school and I did like a live version of the podcast. And guess what, bro? No evidence, because I didn't have a cameraman. So my question is, like, did you have someone there, like, on standby to video you when you did these free gigs? And like, you had the foresight, I need to make sure I get the content, because I'm never thinking about the content. It's so bad.
I had a tripod and a phone.
Okay.
And what's interesting is, this is quite funny, after the first two I didn't record, and then I just googled how to be a speaker, and there was this dude from Australia who had done a TEDx, and I did a consultation with him to see if I was going to do his program, which I didn't do. And the problem, this guy, this is a business lesson for everyone.
Yeah.
In this consultation, he just gave me everything. So I said, why should I pay you now? You told me everything I need to know. But the main thing he said that really stuck with me is, so you say you want to be a speaker, you've spoken in schools. I searched the internet, I couldn't find a thing.
Mm.
How do you expect people to know you're a speaker if you don't show us? I said, huh. So after that, I remember making a video after that where school by school, I would record myself going, doing the school, show a teacher giving a testimonial, show the students giving a testimonial.
Okay, I love that. And just on this bit, like when you're developing like your initial message, you know, you mentioned the fact that you wrote stuff down you thought was funny. It wasn't always funny. Like when you're developing that first script, like, are there other, I suppose, motivational speakers where you've drawn inspiration from? Like, yeah, how is it you went about developing that first pitch?
Very interesting. I used to call myself the Hood's Les Brown. So Les Brown's my guy. However, I didn't necessarily draw inspiration from them. What I did, which is always what I recommend doing, is I asked myself, what would I have needed to hear at that stage in life? If you're speaking to primary school students, just think about the struggles you went through in primary school, you personally, and just say, what would 8-year-old version of me need to hear? Secondary school, same thing. University, same thing. And that's something that I do all the time, and it's incredibly helpful, because the likelihood is they're going through similar things that you went through. Mm-hmm. And too many times people try to speak about just external things. Even just, I think, in business, people try and create businesses that are outside of their realm or things that they're good at. And I just believe, just look within. You already have any adversity that you've overcome, that's a message.
Yeah.
So to answer the question, I literally just thought about what I needed to hear as a kid.
Okay, sick, sick, sick. And that brings us nicely. So coming back to what you were saying, okay, so you started in schools, you did schools purely up until 2022.
Primary schools.
And then...
And then, this is where the magic happens. It's December 2021. I've been doing school since I quit my delivery driver role in April. I don't know any speakers. I watched a show called Undercover Billionaire. I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
That show changed my life, bro.
Okay.
Because Undercover Billionaire, there are 3 billionaires who go undercover in America in a city that they've never been to. New name, they haven't got their contact. All they have is $100. Mm-hmm. I think that's it, and a phone. They don't even have somewhere to sleep. And in 90 days, they need to create $1 million business.
Oh, swear.
Crazy. Mm. Now, I don't fully remember. I think one of them hit 5 million. Crazy. Grant Cardone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he hit 5 million. And then one lady just hit 1 million. And another lady was about, her valuation was about 600,000. That's in 90 days. And I was like, what have these guys done? All of them did it their own way. But what they all did is they went outside. They spoke to people. They told people about their ambitions. And then somehow there'll be one person who knows someone. For example, Grant Cardone would go to barbershops and be like, hey, I'm new to the town. I'm an entrepreneur. Do you guys know any entrepreneurs? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, my boy knows this guy. And that's what basically just kept happening. And somehow they all manifested and created these businesses on the back of just people helping them. Mm. And I thought, okay, this is crazy. I think I need to just leave my house and just see what happens. So I typed in public speaking events on Google, and I just went to loads of different public speaking events. This was December 2021. Some of them were good, some of them were rubbish, some of them were free, some of them were expensive. I just immersed myself in it. Because it was half term anyway for kids, I didn't really have many schools bookings. Yeah. And I went to this one event, which is about overcoming the fear of public speaking. And I didn't even know what it really was. I just saw public speaking, I went. And I was sat there with 20 people who were petrified of public speaking. And the coach was helping us understand how we can overcome this fear. And I was like, is this a thing? Afterwards, I spoke to the coach. I said, is this a thing? People are scared of public speaking. He said, bro, it's one of the biggest fears in the world.
I can vouch. Even people will see me on this podcast and think, da-da-da-da. If I get up on stage, my leg, I would need a stanky leg, like, whoa.
Bro, until that point, I thought it was just me that went through this. And I said to him, look, I was a shy, introverted kid. I'm now a speaker in schools. I'd love to do what you do. I think I've got a pretty cool story. And he said, all right, cool. Exchanged details. I followed up with him, no reply.
Always the way.
Followed up again week after, no reply. Whatever. So we're now in January. I remember going to the physio in central London. I get a phone call from this dude. I'm like, hey, what's up? And he said, look, I know this will sound crazy, but I have a class in 3 hours. I've just tested positive for COVID. I cannot get cover. I cannot cancel this class. We got 15 people coming. I remember you saying you want to do something like this. Can you cover me? I said, okay, cool, send me the slides. So after physio, I went to Westminster, delivered the class, and it was amazing. For context, it was a taster class to then upsell a program. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, you probably won't get any sales. It's perfectly fine. Just deliver the class. I got 2 sales in my first class.
Wow.
Just winging it. I'm just giving them advice I needed to hear. The same thing that I told you. I kind of went off script. I'm like, guys, I used to be scared of public speaking. This is what I did. Let's do some exercises. It worked. All right, there's a program. If you want to do the full thing, 2 people signed up. And it was such a crazy moment because I made about £200 commission. The class was an hour and a half. Until that point in schools, I was charging £80. So I was like, I just made £200 in an hour and a half by helping people. I couldn't sleep that night. I couldn't sleep that night. The second thing I learned from that show was that best known beats best. And what that means is that the best known trainer will beat the best trainer because more people know about the trainer. The best known burger will beat the best burger. So I thought, okay, best known beats best. I need to put myself out there and be better known. So I thought to pay some blogs to post the videos of me in schools just so people can know me. And on the back of the first one that I posted, which was the video, if you go on my Instagram, it's the first video, me going from Sainsbury's to speaking, someone DM'd me saying, I run a speaking agency where we go into schools in the UK and in Dubai. I saw your video. Do you want to join us? Bro. So that's, I watched the show. I went outside. I got the opportunity. I posted on this blog. I got that opportunity.
Wait, is it better known? Best known is better than best. Best known beats best. I'm keeping that.
Best known beats best. The best known podcast will beat the best podcast.
Yeah.
The best known barber will beat the best barber. So visibility, success is good work plus visibility. And sometimes we think that good work alone will make us successful, but that isn't the case.
I'm hearing it for this podcast, man.
You hear it, bro.
I'm hearing it for
visibility
this podcast.
Visibility is important. It's pivotal if you want to be successful. So ultimately, all of a sudden, it's 2022. I'm now a public speaking coach for this organization that I randomly helped and I did really well. Now they want me on. And all of a sudden, I spoke at my first secondary school, spoke at my first college, spoke at my first university via this agency called Fix Up that found me through this blog that I paid £200. And that basically just steamrolled my career.
Wow. Just coming back to the increasing of your visibility.
Yes.
Like, for people who are looking to increase their visibility, how is it that you found the relevant blogs to be like, hey, could you post my video? Because you still need to get it to the right visibility. It's not just about visibility.
Absolutely. And trial and error.
Mm.
That's the only way, because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So for me, initially I paid for that blog. I've posted in about 5 different blogs and then I've just seen what's worked better.
And were those blogs about public speaking?
Nope.
What were the blogs about?
Culture.
Okay.
So there were blogs where usually they'd post rappers, footballers, when things go viral. They were just normal blogs. And I just inquired on all, even Made You Think, Your Positive News, I'm Just Bae, Shade Barrow. I just inquired on all of them. How much do you... Yeah, I didn't inquire on all of them. And I just paid the ones I could afford.
What's the most one quoted you?
Thousands.
Hey.
And I didn't go there.
I know that Shade Barrow. Check yourselves.
It was Shade Barrow.
No shade.
It was Shade Barrow. Okay. But the ones I got quoted was thousands. So I just asked all of them. And I didn't necessarily see it as... these guys do anything up to do with personal development or my type of audience will be here. I just thought visibility.
Yeah.
I just thought best known beats best. How am I going to be better known? I don't know. Advertising. Where can I advertise? I can't get TV, radio, social media. I didn't really know how to run ads. So I just thought, cool, I'm just going to advertise on blog pages. And actually, now that I remember, during COVID, I released some songs. I always liked music and it was a bit of a hobby and I released a few songs. And I was doing promo via my music. So that's what gave me the inkling to post on the blog pages, because I was posting the blog page my music. Mm-hmm. So I already just knew it kind of worked because it helped give my music a bit of traction. And then that's when I started
it. So, and it's like blog pages, not Instagram? Just
Instagram blog pages.
Oh, it's, okay. So Instagram blog pages. It's like, so it's like the Instagram page?
Correct.
Like, okay, cool, cool.
Yeah, the Instagram. So when I mean say blog pages, I mean the Instagram blog pages.
Okay, sick. Okay, so you've given us the two steps. Were there any more steps?
In terms of?
So you said, first thing, you just needed to step outside.
Yes.
Meet more people.
Yes.
Second was Best Known Beats Best.
Correct. And then what happened was I started 2022 on fire. I was speaking in primary school still, doing my thing. Now I'm also speaking in secondary schools and colleges through this organization. Now I'm also doing public speaking coaching with another organization. And all of a sudden, I had a lot more strings to my bow. Mm-hmm. And I clocked the formula a little bit. I was like, I just need to keep going outside, keep making myself visible, and more opportunities will keep coming. And that's pretty much what I kept doing. What happened along the way with the public speaking coaching company was that I was running their classes, getting sales for them. And I remember I was making the company between 10 to 30K a month. Out of that, I was making like £1,500 a month.
No.
So I said no.
So it ain't so.
I said no. So something else that I learned from the show was that I needed to have an equity conversation. This is something that I learned again from Undercover Billionaire. I had no intentions of starting my own company. I was like, why am I going to start my own company if this company's been running for 9 years? They already have the machine going. They're already working. I'm just going to help blow them up and get equity in the business. That was my whole idea. However, you need to have a founder on the other side who's willing to give you the equity.
Mm.
He wasn't on it. He wasn't. And we would butt heads consistently. And eventually, I remember having a conversation with him. And I said, you know what? I'm a really nice guy because I could just start my own company at this point. I've hired people for you. I've got you sales. I've closed deals. I've seen how you do your marketing. I could just start my own company. But I don't want to do that. I want to help you build up your company. And you know what he said? Go on then. And I remember just coming away from that saying, say no more. And then that's how Believe in Greatness came about.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, that leads us nicely into Believe in Greatness. Yes. So yeah, what are the different strings to the Believe in Greatness bow?
Yes, so Believe in Greatness started as an athletics club for kids. Now it started because I was going into primary schools. I went to a private school, and after I did the gig, I charged them £100. And then I went home and I saw that the tuition fees was about 9K. No, it was way more than 9K. It was five figures per term or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, this school's making mad fees.
Yeah.
And I just charged them £100. I need to go back.
Yeah.
But I've already given them a talk. So how can I go back?
Yeah.
What else can I do? And I was just racking my brain. I'm like, how can I embed myself in this school? I need some of this money. And I thought, an after school club. Like an athletics club. I'm an athlete. Like, this could work. So I remember going back to the school, telling them, I have an athletics club. I didn't. I have an athletics club. Would your kids be interested? And they're like, okay, maybe. So I created these flyers, handed them out, and five people said they were interested. The only problem is that school was in central London. So I had to go to Regent's Park to deliver the sessions. And we did one session, and it took me 2 hours to get it, 2 hours to get home. I said,
it wasn't worth the...
It's not worth it, man.
Yeah.
Then, it's crazy how it all happened. But during COVID, I put myself on this website called SuperProf. It's a website where you can learn stuff like podcasting, learning the guitar, or you can have a PT. And it was COVID and we was all in lockdown. So I put myself on SuperProf as a personal trainer, even though I'm not. So I was just, I'm an athlete.
Manifest it.
I'm an athlete. If anyone wants to get fit.
Yeah.
So deep, I'm on SuperProf as an athlete, as a personal trainer. What happened was this parent got in touch with me saying, my kid is a tennis player. He's really good at tennis, but he's not very athletic. Can you train him in terms of his athleticism? And I was like, yeah, sure. So once I started to train this random eight-year-old, I'm just trying to make money at this point. And I'm basically doing athletics training with him. I'm realizing, this is the athletics club. It just didn't happen in Regent's Park, but this is it. And that's when I started believing greatness. It was an athletics club for kids. And what we ended up doing is we ended up being a after-school club in lots of different primary schools around Croydon and Bromley. That's still happening today. Fortunately, I have someone who's running that side of the business for me. So when I'm falling out with boss man from that company and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to do my own thing, I thought, I have a company called Believe in Greatness. which is such a beautiful but also quite generic name. We can have the athletics club side of things and the public speaking side of things. Yeah. And that's when we started the public speaking side of things.
Okay.
So what we now are at Believe in Greatness is we have a Believe in Greatness athletics club, which is for kids in primary school, working on their fitness and well-being. And we have Believe in Greatness public speaking side of things, which is what I'm spearheading. And what we mainly do is we help entrepreneurs and professionals with their presentation skills.
Okay.
Be the best versions of themselves when speaking under pressure.
Okay. I love it.
There's a lot.
No. I've got it. I'm just like, where do I go? And I know where I want to go. It's like, when you started in the schools,
yeah,
you said that you tailored the content, you know, you tailored the content based on the age group. Yeah, how was your content evolved over the years is my first question. And then, like, yeah, what are some of the core messages? So, like, oh my god, I keep forgetting it, but like the best phrase you used, what other
best
phrase?
Known beats best.
Yeah, best known beats best. Sorry, that's gonna, I'm trying to get that to best stick. I'm gonna, best. You're gonna catch that on my LinkedIn because I'm about to wheel it up. Like, what are some of the core messages that you deliver, across the speeches you give?
Cool. So, my message has changed over time because my audience has changed over time. Initially, it was keep moving forward, yeah, primary school kids. That was my motto. And then I went into secondary schools and it was more about it's okay to be different. Because I understand that, well, me in secondary school anyway, I just wanted to fit in. And that delayed me finding myself because I'm trying to be like you, I'm trying to be like him, but I don't even know who I am. And I'm telling them my story and telling them once I discovered who I truly was, skyrocketing. So I'm saying it's okay to be different. It's okay to be yourself. That was in secondary schools. And then now that it's more of a corporate thing, the message has changed. But again, I still do two different things. I have the speaking, I have the coaching side of things. Mm-hmm. So when I'm speaking, I'm mainly speaking about peak performance and speaking about being the best version of yourself. And that's when I'm speaking at a conference, I'm speaking to a bunch of people who maybe are business owners. So I'm speaking about peak performance in the context of you and your employees need to be peak performers for your organization to hit the next level. And I have this thing called the three C's. And
let's, I say,
yeah, the three C's. So I'm of the opinion that to truly do well in anything, you need to be a go-getter. A go-getter is someone who doesn't wait for opportunities to come to them. They create opportunities. As we've alluded to in my journey, these opportunities that didn't really exist, I've gone to get them. So I reflected and I'm like, what are three things that I have to do? Three C's. The first one is creativity. So to create opportunities, you have to be creative. You have to think outside of the box. For example, me posting on Instagram blogs that have nothing to do with public speaking, got hella opportunities from that. I'm thinking outside of the box.
I'm coming to a blog near you soon. Watch out, Saint Mara. Give it to me for free. No, I'm joking.
Yes. So whatever you're trying to do, and I'll give you another example. Now I work a lot with corporations and organizations. If you had a business that you're providing a service for other businesses, how would you try to reach those businesses?
I don't know, email.
What else?
Phone.
What else?
Maybe have a podcast and invite them on the podcast.
That's already now thinking outside the box, which is good.
Yeah.
But generally, people do email, phone call, social media, LinkedIn. And everyone's doing that. So I'm thinking, what else can I do? So me, this week, what I did is I put 10 business cards in my pocket and I walked in on 10 businesses in my local area, telling them about my services and telling them about what we do. None of them ended up buying the service. But I'm thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first step. To be a go-getter, you need to be creative.
Yeah.
Number two, you need to be consistent. Because you can knock as much as you want on a door. The way I like to see it is that, let's say the universe was a house. And let's say you're knocking on the door of opportunity. If you just knock a little bit and then you leave, you may say, I tried, but I don't believe you truly tried. Because if we were recording this podcast right now, we are recording this podcast, someone knocked on the door for a little while, we might ignore them. If they kept knocking for about 5 minutes, we're going to see what's going on.
Yeah.
No matter what you are doing in your life, if someone's knocking for ages, you're going to check it out. And I believe that's what you should do to the door opportunity. You need to keep knocking, keep knocking, keep knocking, keep knocking. Eventually, Mr. Opportunity, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. I'm a man of God, so I believe it's God. But whatever it is, if you keep knocking, the door of opportunity will open for you. I truly believe that. So you need to be creative.
Consistent.
You need to be consistent. You need to be courageous. You need to be courageous because you need to be brave. What you do, you put yourself out there on a regular basis with your podcast. That requires a lot of bravery. Anything you try and do that's different, people are not going to understand. You're going to get a lot of rejection. But you have to be courageous. And these three C's are my method to being a go-getter. And I believe that go-getters are peak performance. So when I speak at conferences, that's what I speak about. Sure. And I've had to tailor my message because now I speak to businesses and I'm thinking, I need to deliver value that resonates with my audience. And that's it.
I feel like as you spoke there, it just hit me. You were like, ah! I was like, I'm not brave. But then you said I was brave and I was like, I'm brave.
Yeah. You are brave though, bro.
Man.
Brave,
believe it or not. Because, bro, I think, but I still feel like there's more I can do.
Mm.
Like, I feel like this, I feel comfortable in it now, maybe because I've done it so much, but there's other situations I feel I need to, like outreach, I did it with you, like yourself, but I need to get more confident at that because sometimes I'll send the message, but coming back to what you said, you keep knocking on the door, I knock lightly, bro. Like, I knock so lightly, but if that's my second takeaway from this episode, I need to knock loudly and knock long.
Knock loudly and knock long, my bro. So, I still do email campaigns for schools. I will send 5 follow-up emails.
Wow.
So, if a school hears from me, they'll hear from me Monday to Friday, and the follow-up is the day after. Wow. So, what I used to do, for example, when I wasn't knocking loudly enough, is I'll send one email, I'll follow up the week after, I'll follow up the week after. No. Now, I schedule 5 emails, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I'm bombarding you. And a lot of the times people reply to me saying,
"Loud,
stop it. We don't want your services. Stop emailing me." I'm like, cool. I'd rather get a no than get aired.
Bro, and the thing is, I think, you know, a lot of like life is about perception and just the way you framed it there, I'd rather get a no than get aired. So would I. But I'm just getting aired because I'm not knocking on the door loud enough. And as you've spoken like throughout this whole conversation, yeah, you are creative with what you do. Like, have you gotten to a point now where you don't need to outbound as much? I know you just said you've got the campaigns. Like, how is it you go about sourcing the clients for the various parts of your business?
I'm going to be so real with you, bro. My downfall is that I'm currently hitting a bit of a drought because I thought I didn't need to do outbound anymore. I had so many opportunities come to me that I reduced the amount of volume I put out. And I saw this thing, and it was chasing opportunities versus attracting opportunities. And it was a great metaphor. It was someone chasing opportunities was someone with a basket trying to catch a butterfly. And attracting opportunities was someone creating a garden where there's flowers and the butterflies come to the flowers. And I was so focused on attracting opportunities that I neglected chasing. I think you need to do both. Yeah. And I've learned that the hard way. 100%. So I went to Las Vegas this month and I spoke. And that was the height of my speaking career. Absolutely loved it. And I was in Vegas, then I went to LA, then I went to Turkey to celebrate. And then I came back and looked at my calendar. I said, where are the speaking engagements? Because I was like, I've been out of the country the whole month.
Yeah.
And I've realized it's not enough. You know, so that's the answer to your question. I've recently learned that the hard way, that I think no matter what position you're in, you need to keep going.
Yeah.
And if anything, I now need to leverage the fact I've spoken in Las Vegas to get more global opportunities. And some may come to me, but I still need to keep knocking.
100%. And like, just to piggyback off what you've said, like I've had a very similar experience with the podcast in that, like, yeah, I've, you know, started to get inbounds from people who would like to come on the podcast. Yeah. And yeah, there was a point where I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I've got like 8 guests booked up. But guess what? Time flies.
Time flies.
And it's like, you go through, you record all these episodes, you're really happy. The episodes are coming out every week. And I'm like, Where the guests at?
Bro.
So, bro, you really do have to keep your foot on the pedal. You can't just wait for all the opportunities to come. It's not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable. And I've literally learned that the hard way. So I need to, I'm in a place where I need to find more balance. And I'm always super transparent. Guys, I'm still working it out.
Yeah.
I'm 3 years in the game. I'm still working it out. And yeah, so after Las Vegas, I've hit a bit of a low. But also, I spoke to a friend today, and she told me that because Las Vegas was such a peak, the only way is down.
Yeah.
As much as, because I've kind of felt a bit down, I felt a bit annoyed at myself, that I got a bit complacent, and I have high standards of myself. So I have been a bit annoyed, but she helped me understand that, look, it's absolutely normal. And yeah, now I'm back on the grind, baby.
And just on that, like, you know, thank you for being so open and honest. Like, I love that. Like, what are the steps you're taking to reverse your fortune?
Cool. So one thing that I did this week is I walked into 10 businesses told them about my services. And I learned a lot. I didn't do it as well as potentially I could have or handled the objections. I'm back on the email marketing campaigns, shooting out emails. So that's two things that I've done. I'm back posting a lot more content on LinkedIn. I'm back reaching out to people on LinkedIn. I'm just back on the grind, bro. I'm just back on the grind. And one thing that I'm trying to do, and I've done a little bit, but I'm trying to do more successfully, is trying to open one door that opens many. Yeah. So what that means is that, for example, I offer services to businesses. If I work with an accelerator or an incubator, they work with 5 businesses. So I've opened one door that opened 5 rather than working with this one organization, working with that organization, because I have done that and I currently do that. I'm blessed to work with some sick organizations, but the work isn't that consistent.
Yeah.
For example, I did a gig with Shell last month and they're not going to need me until 2025. So I'm trying to get to a place where I get one door that opens many.
Okay. And then, you know, you mentioned Shell there, you mentioned Las Vegas. You've also been like quite specific with some of like the income that you've had. Yeah. I don't need specifics, but understanding your value from the speeches and everything you're delivering, how is it that you went about understanding the value that you can charge to these organizations?
Cool. I'm happy to be transparent. The highest I've been paid is $7,500 for a talk. Yeah.
How long was the talk?
45 minutes.
I'm gone. No, we're cutting the pod. I'm going to become a public speaker.
Yeah, crazy. That's only happened once. Full transparency, that's only happened once.
Okay.
I've hit 5K a couple times. My average is around 5K. That's where I'd say I'm at the moment. Now, it's really hard to understand your value as a speaker or to know how much you need to charge. There is no way I would have got any of the high-paying gigs that I would have had without my mentor. Because I don't know what I don't know. And it's pivotal, is so important that you get advice from people that have done what you want to do. That's another thing that changed the trajectory of my life, bro, because I would take advice from my mates that haven't done what I want to do. And shout out to the man them, but you have never done it. You're giving me rubbish advice. Sorry.
Yeah, I do,
because I'm trying to do this thing and I'm like, okay, man, I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, do it this way. And I'm doing it and I'm getting no results. I'm like, you've never done it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I will ask for advice from people that have done what I've done. So for example, one of the mentors that I'm referring to, he's booked and busy. He gets about 20K per talk. He does 2 talks a month internationally. All he does, his manager does everything. He just goes to the airport, goes to Venezuela, speaks, come back. 2 weeks later, goes to Mexico, comes back. Done. And they've been pivotal in my growth. There is no way I would be where I am now without my mentors, because I'm learning from all of their mistakes. And that's why in 3 years, I feel like I've had 10 years worth of speaking career in 3 years, because I'm buying time by just working with them.
I love that. And something that I've heard on this podcast before, it's like, yeah, like when it's a mentor or like a sponsor, like, yeah, it's they've already made the mistakes.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I know that you're a very resourceful person. Like, how is it that you got in touch with these mentors and how is it you cultivated getting these mentors?
Yep. So all of the mentors that I've had to pay quite a lot up front.
Okay.
Not necessarily to them. But one mentor, for example, went to this event, which was £135 for like 2 hours, which even till this day, I think that's a lot of money for an event. But I went. It was a public speaking event. And he was one of the speakers. And he was giving us game. He's, I think, in his 70s. He's been in the games for years. He was giving us game on how to drop a contract or how to attract certain speaking engagements, etc. And I remember just taking notes, actioning them, and getting an engagement on the back of what he said. I messaged him on LinkedIn saying, thank you so much for that. I was actually able to get the speaking engagements as a result. He gave me a little bit more advice. I got another gig. I said to him, thank you so much. I just got another gig. He said, let's meet in London for a coffee. Mm.
That should have been you, but he didn't.
Yeah. You see it though?
Yeah.
So that mentor, he just saw that I was someone who took action. I just took his advice and boom, that happened. The second mentor I got, I joined this mastermind, which again was £2,000 for meeting these speakers once a month and speaking about speaking stuff. I'm not going to poo-poo the mastermind because it was helpful.
Just your face doesn't say that, bro.
Yeah, no, it was helpful, just not what was advertised. However, each month they would bring in this super esteemed speaker to give us some advice. One of the super esteemed speakers was Richard, one of my mentors. I ended up staying in touch with Richard. And again, he gave us some advice, which I took. I reported back from him. And then he had this mentor who passed away, but he also says he wouldn't have been able to get to where he got to without his mentor. And then it becomes this weird reciprocal process where now, for example, I mentor people and I just help them for free just because people have helped me for free.
Yeah.
So I say that to say the mentors that I've had success finding are people that initially I had to pay to get into a certain room. Once I got into that room, I took the advice and I actioned it. And then I just reported back to the people who gave me the advice. And then eventually we built a relationship.
I love that. And my friend, this podcast, what did I say at the start? It's all about inspiring people to take immediate action. What's Fred done? He's taking action. Oh my God. I love it. As I've heard you speak there, yeah, you know, you mentioned the fact that you spent £135 to go to one event. You spent £2,000 on a mastermind. Like, with all of these things that you've invested in, can you just talk to us about the importance of investing in yourself?
Guys, we need to invest in ourselves more. The return on investment when you invest in yourself, infinite. Infinite. And I think we're so quick to try and make a quick buck and invest in crypto. And I'm not poo-pooing in these things. If this is what people want to do. This is just my perspective. We're so quick to invest in crypto, invest in real estate, invest in the stock market, do some trading, get e-commerce. But the starting point is to invest in yourself. And we do that by investing in our knowledge, by investing in putting ourselves into certain different rooms. And I'm just a strong believer in that. And Alex Hormozi says this thing where instead of investing in the SME 500, investing in SME 500. Mm. And I strongly just believe in, and I've just been someone who's ruthlessly invested in myself. Sometimes it hasn't paid off necessarily straight away, but even early on, when I'm telling you I'm posting on these Instagram pages, it's a lot of money. However, they've all ended up, I believe I'm in this position because I'm not scared to do that. I'm not scared to put my money where my mouth is and back myself.
Yeah. And, you know, just as I've heard you speak there, yeah, like you said, people, they're willing to gamble on crypto and da-da-da. Why not gamble on yourself?
Facts.
Because, like you said, the bar is so deep. The ROI is infinite. And that's what I'm going to say to my wife. Anytime
bro.
I'm going to spend on myself.
The ROI
is infinite, baby.
And also, like, to be fully honest and transparent, for example, I would be someone who on a weekend, I would put a bet on a footy.
Yeah.
Just trying to make a... I don't do that anymore. And again, if you do that, nothing wrong with it. But just because the £50 I was going to put on Akka over the month, I'll just invest it back in myself, bro. I'll just spend that £50. I'll go to a networking event.
Yeah.
End of the day, I'm trying to make peace both ways. So am I going to bet on Erling Haaland to score in the first 30 minutes? Do you know what I'm saying? If there's a low block, I'm finished. I'm finished. Or am I going to invest in a networking event where I know I'm going to spend £50 on this event. Now I need to make the investment worth it. I'm going to work the room. I'm going to come out with some contacts. And that's ultimately the mindset shift that really helped me.
You've just said something there, which has triggered me. Work in the room.
Mm.
I know that if I was to invest money or go to a networking event, I'm a very sociable person, but if I'm there on my own, I'm going to struggle to strike up conversation and maybe get the ROI that we're after. Okay. It looks like you don't have that problem. So question. I could be wrong, but yeah, what is your approach to making sure you work the room and get the value from networking?
Question, have you been to a networking event by yourself before?
Yes.
Okay.
It wasn't a network. Well, yeah, I went to an event. Yeah, I did.
And you said you struggled with it, yeah?
I mean, I did network. But okay.
And then you've been to networking event with friends as well?
I haven't been to that many, if I'm being honest. Cool. So this event, I went, I saw a couple of people who I knew because I've been to like another event before. And you kind of just stick with the one or two people that you know. Okay. And you're not going to have too many conversations. That was my experience.
And the maddest thing is, I say that because I network more when I go to networking events by myself than when I go with a friend.
Because you're forced to.
Because I'm just there with my friend. And we end up getting a bit caught up speaking. Whereas when I'm by myself, it's backs against the wall. And bro, I still find it uncomfortable. And one thing that I teach with my presentation skills is that it's normal to be nervous. We weaponize things like nerves. And we think they're a sign of danger. I'm nervous, so I shouldn't speak to anyone. Nerves usually are just a sign that you care. They're a sign that the stakes are high. And I'm fortunate enough that I learned this in athletics. That just because I'm nervous because of a race before a race doesn't mean I'm not going to run well. But I'll go into a networking event by myself. I'm nervous, bro.
Yeah.
I'm nervous. I'm anxious. I don't really want to speak to people, but I do it. Something that helps me, though, is that on a regular basis, I do stuff that is a bit uncomfortable. For example, if I have a bit of time and I'm at Tesco Express, I won't go self-checkout. I'll go to the till and I'll speak to the person at the till, ask them how their weekend has been, even though I didn't really want to do it. Or I'm on a flight. I'm next to someone, they're reading. I'm asking them, what are you reading? Or I'm at Costa, I'm asking, do you do student discount? I'm not even a student. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I will often do these little things that make me a bit uncomfortable that anyone can do. You can go to the train station and rather than go to the machine, you speak to the person and you ask them how their week has been. And so I give myself little bits of evidence on a regular basis that I can do these things. So when I do go to a networking event, I've done the training and now, boom, we're gone.
Yeah.
But the mistake people make, not even just with networking, just with life, is that they try and practice when the stakes are high. Like you've done no presentation skills training, and now you're speaking in front of a big client for the first time in 5 years, and you're mad nervous, you don't know what to do. You should have practiced the thing before the thing. Yeah. That's again something I learned in sports. People don't just bang in free kicks on match day, they're practicing a million times before. So that's something people should take into consideration.
Fred, I love that. And the final question I have on that, like, all right, I go to the networking event on my own.
Cool.
What I think overwhelms me is you see people and maybe they're with their friends and
it
looks like they're catching up. Like, they're buzzing jokes.
Okay.
It's like, can I really like go? Like, I don't want to bother them.
Okay.
They seem like they're so engrossed in the conversation. Okay. How is it you lock onto your targets?
Okay. I often wouldn't speak to those groups.
Okay.
I'm by myself. I'm walking around. We catch eye contact. Hey, man. How you doing? Yeah. What's your name?
Yeah.
Every person I make eye contact with, I ask them about. And also, I go into those environments with no expectation. Because sometimes I think that can mess us up. Because I've told people go to networking events and then they message me back saying, oh, I didn't get any business. I'm like, that is not the objective. And if you go in there with that objective, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I go in there just to literally just meet people, tell them about my stuff. Again, the visibility thing, best known beats best. You go there, you get to know what people do, you tell them about your thing, and then potentially you go. So what I would say is, maybe don't start with a big group where people are catching up, eh? Likelihood is you're not the only one that's by yourself. You walk around, there'll be someone else who's by themselves. You make eye contact, you have a conversation. You see what they're about, you see what you're about. There might be room to collaborate, connect on LinkedIn. On to the next. I know I make it sound simple.
And no, but it's real, bro. It's real.
And give yourself a bias to action. Which means that you need to give yourself a countdown, 1, 2, 3, I'm going to speak to the person on the left. Without overthinking. Because when you start overthinking, then it's hard to pull yourself out of it. And you need to be very intuitive, or try to be intuitive. So give yourself a bias to action, like, okay, I'm going to count to three, I'm going to do this. Boom. 1, 2, 3, what was it? Walk to them, greet their hand.
I love it. Like, to the listener who's gotten to this point, this podcast is about inspiring people to take immediate action and find a career of their dreams.
Cool.
What would be your one bit of advice for somebody to, take immediate action in their life right now?
I think the starting point, from my experience, would be to write down your strengths and your weaknesses. You write down your strengths and your weaknesses because you want to increase your self-awareness, understand where you are currently at. The other day, I was speaking to my boy, and I was like, what are you good at? And he said, I don't know. And I presume that a lot of people are in that situation. If you've never actually asked yourself that, you don't know. And I think that's a starting point.
Yeah.
Write down your strengths and your weaknesses. Then I think you ought to leave your house, go outside.
But before you leave your house, watch Undercover Billionaire.
That show's fire, bro.
Two seasons.
Watch both of them. Fire. And then just see what do these billionaires have in common. But yes, you have to leave your house and you have to put yourself in environments that are going to inspire you. And there are lots of free events. But man,
that's plenty. That's plenty, by the way. Yeah, you don't need to.
That's enough. That's it.
Yeah, like, as we round out this section, bro, we have something called, like, oh, I haven't even done it in a while, the Manifest Corner. Yeah. Where does Fred see himself in the next 5 and 10 years and the business?
Where does he see himself in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, bro, manifest it.
Ha! In 10 years, I will be one of the best and biggest speakers in the world.
And we'll run it back on one of the biggest podcasts in the world because this is going to be there.
That will be in 10 years. And in 10 years, my business, Believe in Greatness, will be the go-to place for any professional or any entrepreneur who wants to overcome their fear of public speaking or enhance their presentation skills.
I love it. Fred, man, this has been such a sick conversation. We've got a quick fire round.
Let's do it.
Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Memorize a speech or improvise?
Improvise.
Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Favorite quote?
Believe in greatness.
Love it. Small intimate audience or large crowd?
Small intimate audience.
Speak at conferences or corporate events?
Corporate events.
I know you do both, but
yeah,
that's it. Coach a nervous novice or elevate an expert speaker?
Coach a nervous novice.
Love it. Perfect opening lines or strong closings?
Strong closings.
Use slides or no visual aids?
Use slides.
And then finally, who's your dream dinner guest?
My dream dinner guest is Les Brown.
Les, if you're listening, invite me to the dinner too, because I want to open this whole game. Now, Fred, we do have a closure tradition on this podcast. Like, with everything that you've experienced in your life and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
With everything I've learned so far, I would tell my younger self that it's okay to be yourself. That you don't need to try and be something that you're not. And that ultimately, greatness is already within you. You just need to activate it, which is not going to be easy, but stop looking externally. Greatness is within.
Love it. And would you still be doing the same thing?
Yeah.
Of course you would. Of course you would. Fred, this has been such a sick conversation. Where can people find you, bro?
Yes, so you can find me on all social media platforms, but it's all different names. So on IG, I think Google my name.
I'm gonna put it in the show notes, actually. Yeah, because it's all different.
If you Google Frederick Afrifa, everything comes up.
Yeah.
And reach out to me. There's actually one guy, quick story.
Yeah, please.
There's one guy who now works with Believe in Greatness. His name is Tommy Adeg. He said he had been following me for ages. Stunting to message me. Eventually messaged me, said, oh, this guy's not going to reply. I replied. I always reply to people. I replied to him.
Replied to me. Well, I also thought the same thing.
I always replied to people. I replied to him. I invited him to one of my events. He traveled from Kent to Brixton, came to my event. 2 years later, he's now a TEDx public speaking coach. So he coaches people that deliver TEDx public speaking coaches. His life is changing. He's a Believe in Greatness coach. And this is all because he wasn't too scared, or he overcame his fear to reach out to me. So I'm not saying that's going to happen to you if you reach out to me. I'm just saying that don't be scared to reach out to people that you look up to, because they might help.
Do you know what? And I've got a quote that I love that Jay-Z says, the closed mouth doesn't get fed.
Love that.
Like, if you don't ask, you do not get.
Facts.
So yeah, bro.
Facts. Having said that, if you need any help to do with presentation skills, public speaking. If you are a speaker, you want to figure it out. If you're a professional, you get nervous and anxious. If you want to know more about public speaking, reach out to me.
Love it. Love it, Fred. This has been an amazing conversation. And to the listener, if you've gotten to this point in the podcast, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, share, comment. This has been What My Best Friend Does. Guys, we're all about taking immediate action and inspiring you to do so. I know this episode has done that, so you know what to do. Go outside, take some immediate action. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.